welcome to the Acupuncture Outsider podcast. My name is Richard Hazel, and in the time it takes for you to commute to or from work, I hope to have shared something of interest about orthopedic acupuncture using motor points, trigger points, myofascial slings, neurofunctional acupuncture, segmental treatments, anything that crosses my mind that seems to be of interest. I hope you'll enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Acupuncture Outsider. This is Richard Hazel. It's probably been about a month since I last put out a podcast episode, but I got really busy with preparing to go to Sydney to teach for China Books Sydney, just new clinic things, and it just got really, I guess, a little overwhelming. And I just didn't feel like I had anything new or exciting to record an episode about. But the Sydney trip was great. It sold out. I was surprised it sold out because about a month before I had reached out just to say, how are we doing? Do you think we'll fill the course? I think it's the sixth time I've taught there, and the expectation based on their experience is the numbers start to dwindle over time. They typically can't bring somebody out more than a couple times because the numbers just won't they drop each time. I think in some instances the material has been covered, who was interested has come, and now there are just a smaller amount of people who are interested in coming. But I think something with in this case the material is constantly changing, my opinions about things change, my approach to teaching them changes as I learn better ways to explain things and demonstrate things, and as my opinion changes about how to treat or explain different conditions, then the material is always changing. And as you know, if you've listened to the podcast, I'm really in the past couple of years really into nerve entrapment syndromes, and that is mostly palpation, hands-on palpation for diagnosis, because manual muscle tests won't really work for most nerve entrapments. The nerve entrapments that you can muscle test are the ones that the doctor always finds, like carpal tunnel, thoracic outlet, sciatica. The ones that the doctor doesn't find are the ones that require palpation skills. You have to know where the nerve is passing through the muscle and what area it would be entrapped in. And in those situations, like if it's a nerve that's being entrapped by abdominal muscles, you have to know where those entrapments are going to be and be able to locate them with palpation, and manual muscle testing will not be sufficient. So I'm really into that stuff because that's the tricky stuff, and those are the things that you look back a few years, 5 years, 6 years, and you remember a patient that you felt you didn't help as much as you wished you had, and you now know why, because you recognize that they very likely had a cutaneous nerve entrapment or some sort of nerve entrapment syndrome that you at that time did not recognize. And no blame if you're in the same boat as I am on that, because the doctors didn't get it either. The specialists didn't find them either. No guilt there. These are the tough things to spot, and they take more education, and you have to learn from the right people who actually know how to find them. So that's And, you know, I'm always telling you about Dr. Andrea Trescott. Listen, if you haven't gotten her book yet, at least go on YouTube and watch her lectures. You're going to learn something just from her lectures. So they're right there free, like hour-long lectures, at least two of them I can think of. So look for those. So Sydney was great. It sold out. Very happy. The host, Georgina Black, who owns China Book Sydney, told me that I'm the only person that she's been able to bring six times and still sell out. So I was very excited about that. I think, it just has to do with me taking their feedback, me trying to bring new and interesting things. I bring the core material that everyone needs to learn, and then I try to bring new and interesting information. And it was great because I saw people there that I've seen over the years. Some of them I haven't seen since before COVID. And there was still new material for them. So they were happy. I was happy. It worked out great. And I will eventually be getting those recordings up on Podia. I didn't receive them yet. They're still being edited. But they always do a great recording with, microphone on my collar and for really good sound. And then also they have a handheld cam for the demonstrations, and it's all in HD. It's great. It's a 4-day seminar, so we'll be doing that soon. We'll put it up on Podia. Next seminar is in June, middle of June. It's our second European orthopedic and sports acupuncture conference or congress. Europe likes to do congresses. And I'm excited about that. That's going to be with me and Josh Margolis and Jenny Neeters. If you don't know them, come and see why they are part of this Congress. It's always great to learn from great teachers, but it's even better when they're great people. You'll really like them. You'll have a good time after the, in the evening going out and schmoozing with us after. They're good people to know. And they're in California. So if you are West Coast in the U.S. and you're maybe not able to go to Amsterdam in June, then look for them teaching on the West Coast. They are both teaching out there in California. So look into that. I'll put a link for the Amsterdam course. I hope you'll come to Amsterdam. It's just such a great experience. It's a great city. It's a great, 3-day seminar with material that I'm sure you haven't learned. As I look across the sort of the outline for courses that are taught in North America, I can tell you what we're teaching is different. And it's so if you're, if you've been doing, if you're kind of like a devotee for one of the other people who teach in North America, maybe mix it up and come check out what we're teaching in Amsterdam. It won't be repeat material for you. I'll be teaching one half day about upper extremity stuff like de Quervain's and cubital tunnel and some radial tunnel stuff like nerve entrapments and typical wrist and thumb pain. And then the other half day, which I really love, is the foot pain and neuropathy stuff. So covering tibial nerve entrapments that cause plantar nerve issues. And other foot pains, by the way, that will get misdiagnosed as plantar fasciitis. And then dorsal foot numbness, which you'll see a lot on your seniors, that can come from the superficial peroneal cutaneous nerve. So we'll be going through assessment and treatment for those scenarios, especially really learning the tibial nerve entrapment stuff is just, you're going to use that over and over and over. You don't realize until you recognize it, how many people have nerve entrapments that are affecting their feet. So hopefully you'll come out. I'll put the link. Today I've covered I have covered the coracobrachialis in the context before of anterior shoulder pain that's been missed, but I thought I wanted to talk today just about coracobrachialis, because it's a beast when it's causing pain, and it's, if you don't know where it is, you might not palpate it. And if someone hasn't told you about it, you might not even be testing it or treating it, because it runs just along the sort of the medial border of the anterior deltoid. And once you know it's there, you'll find it. It's a tight, ropey muscle on most people who are in pain. It is prone to getting taut bands in it, like tight trigger points in it. But coracobrachialis goes from the front of the scapula at the coracoid process down to the humerus. I think it attaches just a little lower than the intertubercular sulcus, where the other, those three muscles like the lat, pec, major, and teres major attach. So it makes this really diagonal angle. When your arm is hanging straight down, it's just like a really interesting angle from the front of the scapula to the humerus. And it helps on shoulder flexion. But it also does horizontal adduction, adduction toward the center of the body. So it gets injured a lot on pressing, like bench press and push-ups. You'll see this injury on people who do pressing movements a lot. I can't say it doesn't get injured from overuse on shoulder flexion, but my feeling about it is the people that I see who get injured, it's more likely from the horizontal adduction movement, the pressing like a bench press or push-up, that seems to cause the injury of the coracobrachialis. And it's such a tight muscle. If you palpate it on yourself, it might even be sensitive even if you don't have anterior shoulder pain. But anyway, so let's talk about the coracobrachialis. It is innervated by the musculocutaneous nerve, which happens to also innervate the biceps brachii, and on about 80% of people, part of the brachialis. And the musculocutaneous nerve becomes a sensory cutaneous nerve in the radial part of the forearm, which is quite interesting, isn't it? Because it's a motor nerve that becomes all sensory when it gets past the elbow. So I think that's very interesting. And it's something to be on the lookout for, because some people do have like a hypersensitization or tingly or burning sensation. Sometimes it's even just pain in the radial part of the forearm, and they can tell that it's at a cutaneous level. So be on the lookout for that, and then you know that the treatment is going to be in the coracobrachialis. And entrapment of the musculocutaneous nerve can also cause weakness on shoulder flexion from the biceps brachii. So that's another thing to be on the lookout for. It doesn't have to be so entrapped that it is paralyzed. It may just be a little weak. So check that out. Think about the coracobrachialis for biceps issues or any kind of, I don't know what you call it, like a paresthesia or burning of the radial part of the forearm. That's, for men, that's where the hair is going to grow. I guess, you know, and women get hair there too, but we see men's hair on their forearms in that distribution, the cutaneous distribution. So that's the area that we're talking about. And now that you know that, you're going to see it. I treated it at least twice last year. So guaranteed you're going to see it now. And someone will come in and say, I just get this sensitization on my forearm here, or it burns sometimes, or I wake up at night and my shoulder hurts and I get burning in my forearm. And you're going to say, oh, I think it's your corticobrachialis. Let's go check it out. The motor point for the corticobrachialis is four fingers away from the coracoid process of the scapula along the path of the corticobrachialis, of course. The best way to find the corticobrachialis is to feel the anterior deltoid. Your patient can, if they're lying on their back, they can slightly lift their arm off the table about an inch or two, and then you'll feel that muscle engage, and you'll be able to feel better the anatomy there. Once you've found it successfully a few times, you'll just be able to just point straight at it and push your finger on it without having to even palpate. So let's talk about shoulder flexion, because it is a shoulder flexor, and it does sometimes cause anterior shoulder pain on flexion. The primary flexor of the shoulder, If I just had to guess, I would say it was the anterior deltoid, but it's not. It's the clavicular head of the pectoralis major is the primary flexor of the shoulder. So the upper head on your pectoralis muscle is the big flexor of the shoulder. And then I would say the anterior deltoid is probably second, and the coracobrachialis is probably third in like the strength or the ability to flex the shoulder. But those are your primary flexors of the shoulder. I think the coracobrachialis gets overworked when one or the or both of those other muscles becomes fatigued or inhibited. And like I said, I think the coracobrachialis really gets injured on like things like bench press. Now, what is that in that? That's like horizontal adduction, right? Well, the big horizontal adductors are the pectoralis sternocostal head. That's the big pec muscle that everybody wants to build. So that's your horizontal adductor. So if the pecs are getting fatigued, or maybe you're going for the full range of motion for your press, meaning you're using dumbbells instead of a barbell, so that you can drop a little bit lower than where the bar would hit at your chest, you're probably stretching that coracobrachialis to its outer limits, and then you're at risk of injuring it and creating a tendinopathy situation where you're going to have a lot of anterior shoulder pain. And don't forget, it's full of trigger points, so it's not hard to create shoulder pain with when you get active trigger points in the coracobrachialis. When you have active trigger points in the coracobrachialis, your motor point will not really be sufficient. You're going to have to dry needle the coracobrachialis. I tend to needle it from medial to lateral inside the muscle to get really good twitches. And you really need to pay attention to where the pain is, because it can be a lot closer to the humerus than where we would normally treat a motor point for the coracobrachialis. So look into that as well. That is a really, really common anterior shoulder pain, which I've mentioned in other episodes, but it gets missed a lot. Some of the symptoms that I ask patients about are, does it hurt for you to cross your arm over to the other side? Like if you were soaping your other armpit and in the shower. That's the one I think of, because that's when I remember when I've had this injury that it would hurt the most, is when I was in extreme reaching across the body to the other side. Or if you're sleeping on your side, let's say it's your right shoulder that hurts and you're sleeping on your left side and your right arm is crossed past the midline, so it's resting maybe on the bed or a small pillow, that will hurt in the front of the shoulder. And in that situation, you're probably getting a couple pillows so that if you want to sleep on your left side, then you're propping your arm up high enough that it's not crossing midline and not hurting from that. So that's a really common symptom of a coracobrachialis injury. Don't forget how much coracobrachialis limits your ability to reach the back of your reach to your low back with the back of your hand, like an Apley scratch. So you know how you take your arm into extension, and then you go into a little bit of shoulder internal rotation, and then you go into adduction to get to be able to rub the your mid back with the back of your hand. Most of that restriction is coming from the infraspinatus and the supraspinatus. Those are my go-to muscles to restore that function. But don't forget, and by the way, tricep can be affecting that as well. Don't forget that the coracobrachialis, while it has nothing to do, well, all right, it is a flexor and you are going into shoulder extension, you're probably not going to think about releasing the coracobrachialis to improve that Apley scratch movement. But it is a big restrictor of that range of motion. So don't forget to treat the coracobrachialis when someone is having a hard time reaching their back in the Apley scratch movement. That the Apley scratch, for people who are new to orthopedic testing, is typically considered a rotator cuff test, because your other arm is reaching up over the back of your head and the palm is going down to the middle of your back, and hopefully your fingers are going to come close to touching. I can only do that on one side, the other side not so good. It's pretty normal after you get to a certain age to not have great mobility on the Apley scratch, because our rotator cuff muscles have gotten tighter and tighter and tighter. But it's considered a rotator cuff test because of the internal external rotators being the subscap and the internal and the infraspinatus. They're kind of inhibiting each other, and working on both sides of the scapula will definitely improve that mobility, that movement. Supraspinatus also, while it is an abductor, if you are trying to reach the middle of your back in adduction, you are fighting against the tight abductor, which is supraspinatus. So really your go-tos for that Apley's are going to be, when you're trying to reach the mid-back, is going to be like infraspinatus and supraspinatus. And then also the coracobrachialis, really big part of that. There are other things to consider, like triceps definitely affect overhead reach and probably reaching the mid-back as well. There are other things to consider. The latissimus dorsi, you know, it attaches to the front of the shoulder, puts us into an internal rotation. So perhaps when you're doing the Apley's and you're doing the overhead reach one, or you're trying to put your palm in the back, middle of your back, reaching up over your head, you know, lats and pecs could be putting internal rotation on the shoulder, making that a little harder to do. So it's considered a rotator cuff test. However, when we're thinking mobility, there's a whole lot more involved, right? Anyway, I've completely gone off topic of coracobrachialis, but I just want to put it out there. Coracobrachialis is so important and so ignored. Why does it get ignored? I think it gets ignored because the people who are doing functional assessment and treating without needles, don't have to care as much as we do, because when you do, like, say you do a muscle test for anterior shoulder for like deltoid, you might have pain there from coracobrachialis, and anterior deltoid, or one or the other. If you're doing rehab for that person, you're probably not that concerned about whether it's the anterior deltoid or the coracobrachialis or both, because you're not using needles. You're just trying to functionally help the shoulder, probably by doing some scapular work, you know, working on scapular stability and, you know, anything that restricts shoulder flexion, like the lats. So maybe you're stretching the lats. You're trying to help upward rotation, like serratus anterior in the lat, and you're trying to, you know, work on anything that could be rotator cuff, because you know, when the infraspinatus is tight, that you can get anterior shoulder pain on flexion, shoulder flexion, raising your arm from the infraspinatus. So you can get anterior shoulder pain on shoulder flexion when your infraspinatus is short and tight and injured. So if you're thinking functionally from maybe physiotherapy, physical therapy sort of approach, you're thinking about let's make sure there's great scapular stability. Let's try to restore mobility to the joint by working on anything that inhibits shoulder flexion. Maybe we're going to be strengthening the anterior shoulder because we're assuming that it got injured from weakness. So you don't really have to care that it was coracobrachialis. You can just treat it as a problem with shoulder flexors like the pec, delt, and then coracobrachialis, if you even think about it. So it gets forgotten. Those of us who use needles need to be able to distinguish between an anterior deltoid issue, a coracobrachialis issue, maybe a clavicular head of the pectoralis issue, or infraspinatus issue. So we have to be a little bit better at distinguishing the real problem, because we want to use one needle and have the pain go away. And I love when you can do that, when somebody's had chronic anterior shoulder pain and they've been to the doctor and the MRI was fine, and they just have shoulder pain. And, you know, maybe they've even tried to rehab it and it still hurts. You'll find that you can release the coracobrachialis and give them at least a significant improvement. If it isn't completely better after a few minutes with electric stimulation on the coracobrachialis. And of course, I think you should always treat the anterior deltoid. Maybe consider the pec if you think it's related, but anterior deltoid and coracobrachialis are my go-to for that sort of anterior shoulder pain. You know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, one hertz of stim, electric stimulation, and you take the needles out, most of the time they're pain-free. When they're not, that's when you're thinking trigger points in the coracobrachialis. So then you have to start palpating from the coracoid process all the way through the muscle toward the humerus, and find things that feel hard and ropey that your patient agrees are the source of the pain. And then you're going to use your needle and get some good twitches out of it. Coracobrachialis issues usually can be resolved in at least in 1 to 3 sessions, most of the time, one session. It'd have to be like a really like long chronic issue to not release well enough on the first visit. And that has happened to me. So I have patients where I've had to treat it a couple times to get complete relief. But most of the time, motor points are going to be all you need. And then some part of the time, you'll need to do some trigger point release. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. that's the episode. Look for the link for the Amsterdam sign up if you're interested. And of course, I will let you know when the new recordings from Sydney are going up online. All right. Happy eclipse, and we'll talk to you soon.